homeless activist in Santa Cruz for many years. Hasn't been seen for about 6 months, but he was quite a fixture in town. And he was given the heave-ho at Java House thanks to Kevin and Stewart's trying to curry favor with the planning commissioner. Again, on around the issue of he'd smoked a joint David Wanton Dave had outside the Java House, half a block away, according to Dave, and Red Top Robert Flory was with him. That was denied by Stuart Cooper when we had our demonstration. They claimed it was right outside the Java House, but who cares? Right outside, you know, half a block away. These guys are posing as hipsters, and you know, it's well known that Kevin smokes dope, even though he lies about it and says he doesn't. And the reality is, who cares? I smoke dope. Probably everybody who calls into the station smokes dope. It's no big deal. In fact, it's much better if you admit it, because we need a movement that is saying, you know, let's be real about what we do, and the more honest we are, the less they have on us. I'm not saying you should necessarily, invite the police into your house. That's not the point. But the point is, trying to maintain a hypocritical cover on this issue is not a helpful one, and actually just gives more fuel to the kind of right-wing forces that are producing the fear in our society, building the jails and locking people up for victimless crimes. In the studio, I have Dragon's Heart Daniel Hopkins, who I'm now going to attempt to coax into the next room. Daniel, come on in here. And here, pull up a chair and tell us what's shaking with you. Daniel Hopkins is, of course, one of the New Brighton Beach campers, also known as the River Street Refugees. Daniel is one of the few from that encampment who actually believe in getting involved in protests downtown, at least recently. Danny, what's happening out at New Brighton Beach? Any report for us?
Well, good morning. It's a beautiful day out there today. I just can't believe the air is really fresh and the sun's out, and it's just so beautiful out there. It's a wonderful day to be outside. I rode my bike down from New Brighton Beach over to here, and I felt really good. Out at the beach, most of us are in fairly good spirits. We're not sure about our future. However, we all started doing a little bit of work to chip in and pay our own way at the camp. We have a little reserve in, money in the bank because fairly large donations were made to us. And so we're trying to keep that in reserve in case an emergency comes up or anything, and we need money for other things. We're paying for our food, and like myself, I'm unemployed. Receive food stamps or general assistance. I haven't gone out of my way to do that. So I needed to pay my share the other day, and within one day I was able to go down and I collected some recycled cans around the park and stuff, and I got enough to pay my way for a whole week. Anyway, we went to visit with County Supervisor
Walt Simon.
And
help you.
And that was a very interesting meeting. We were trying to find alternatives for an open-air shelter or a campground. And, of course, Barbara Riverwoman had many suggestions. She's went out and...
Barbara Riverwoman is a community activist, for those who don't know, who I call Brimstone Barbara, who actually, in solidarity, pitched a tent on December 11th and stayed with the campers when they were under imminent threat of eviction in violation of a verbal contract from the property owners, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, stayed with them for 5 days until they were, in fact, evicted, thanks to musical mayor Mike Rapkin, who certainly had the campers singing the blues, there's no question. And he deported them all out to New Brighton Beach, paid for them for 2 weeks, and then washed his hands and went back to work. But Barbara Riverwoman has been with them since, as has Sherry Connable, who's also a long-term community activist around issues of homeless rights and particularly a safe place to sleep.
And so Barbara Riverwoman gave several suggestions as alternative sites, and that we could pay our own way, or if someone with private land was to donate their land, excuse me, and we could work their land, like if they needed their land cleaned up or something like that, in exchange for rent. Simon's answer to that was that we should go to Fort Ord and try to get federal authorities to give us the houses that are boarded up at Fort Ord. And of course, Barbara Riverwoman really reacted to that, because She said that many of these people had lived in Santa Cruz all of their lives, and that he was asking them to move clear down to Fort Ord, and how would they send their, one of them has a child, how would he send his child to the school that she's going to? And he says, well, he says, I offered you an alternative, and you didn't accept it. And, am I talking too loud?
No, you're doing fine.
Oh, okay. And, so that reaction, the inflection of his voice and everything was very harsh, you know. And then he said, after she presented her ideas and everything, he also said that, well, you're not going to get it the way you want it. And so that was the extent of the meeting yesterday, you know. And I felt that this was a very harsh person, and that we were hitting another stone wall. And I've been getting a feeling in the Santa Cruz politics that there seems to be this harshness and coldness of heart throughout many of the politicians in this area. And I think it has something to do with discrimination. Discrimination against the homeless, discrimination against musicians, discrimination, may possibly even racial, I don't know. And this goes throughout not only the politicians, but then once the politicians have those kinds of attitudes, somebody was ringing the phone, but it's not on now.
Hey, right, Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're on the air. Hi. Who's this?
Mr. Bates, Master State.
Cool. Who's this? You sound like a young guy.
Master Bates, Master State.
Certainly strong advice for a Friday morning. What's your name, guy? Hello?
Master Bates, Master State.
All right. Try to put a little lilt into it. A little music will be nice.
Can you sing it?
Well.
It's the police.
Sounds like a slogan city. Well, listen, I want to thank you for your thoughts on this. Anything else you want to say before you go?
Is this an off-scene call?
I think so. All right, listen, you take care of yourself.
Stop.
Bye-bye.
Masturbate and Smash the State. That's actually the name of a song, often sung by Skidmark's Bob and the band Just Kidding. Pretty good song, actually, and one which, of course, has a couple of taboo lyrics, but hey. Fuck the police, of course, is an expression of outrage frequently heard in situations where there's a lot of police abuse. So to hear it coming from the mouth of a young person, while it's kind of a little bit shocking in a way, it also indicates perhaps the kind of family that that young person is coming from, which is a family concerned about these issues and also concerned about getting over the taboos around using those kind of words. So we will take your call no matter how old or young you are. We will even talk baby talk back at you if you want to goo-goo at us. So, you know, that's fine. So Daniel, you had a meeting with the supervisors yesterday. Again, now the situation seems to be you guys, River Street refugees, are roaming from campground to campground every 2 weeks because the state park system requires you to do that. And in the meantime, the situation for the majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz remains one of criminal status after 11 o'clock at night, thanks to the city's sleeping ban.
Yeah, and one person that was at the meeting yesterday who was a homeless camper said he knows of at least 300 camps in the forest of homeless people, and this is like only a very small sliver of the homeless.
This was the meeting with Walt Simons, or are you talking about?
With Walt Simons, yeah. He said he himself, one of the homeless campers that was at the meeting, claimed that he knew at least 300 people out in the forest where they had camps and stuff. He knows about those.
Who was this guy?
Sammy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And how many people actually met with Walt Simons? How many were with you in that group?
There was myself, Barbara Riverwoman, and Sammy Atkins.
So there were the three of you. For those who want to get in touch with your group, what number should they call? Barbara Riverwoman, perhaps?
Yes, that would be the best telephone call to get, because she's got an answering machine. And Barbara Riverwoman number is 425-5939.
Right. Yeah, you know, I'm... Barbara and I actually had a long chat last night, and I did an interview with her on the air, which actually on the phone, which I'm hoping to put on the air today, although I never seem to have enough time. I found myself thinking, Barbara again was kind of saying that, you know, they're going to, as I understand this, Dan, you're going to give until March 10th or 15th, whenever the armory opens up, or closes down, I should say. So the people who are going to the armory every night now have no place to go, and that group of people comes out onto the, you know, is again confronted with the sleeping den, and there is no Coral Street open-air shelter, since apparently the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is intent on its determination not to run a shelter, whether or not it gets those community house trailers up on that property at Coral Street or not. That's my understanding right now, although they haven't actually stated that explicitly. They don't want to run a shelter there. I mean, they don't want to run a campground. They don't like it. And they're not going to let anybody else run a campground there either, even if they can't get their trailers, although who knows? You know, one can never tell what they're going to do. But and also the campers, at least the New Brighton Beach campers or the River Street refugees have pretty much decided they don't want to go back to the Coral Street shelter. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. The Coral Street shelter is very undesirable with the management that's there. I had long lists of things that happened there that were inhumane and unsanitary, unhealthy situations, mismanagement.
And remember, you actually spoke at City Council on Tuesday afternoon, when the Citizens Committee for the Homeless was seeking funding, $50,000 or so, for support in putting in these so-called free Stanford modular trailers. They're actually about $1 million. To set up for the first year, and you were there, and you gave actually, not only did you give a speech, you distributed a speech, which actually I invite you to read on the air, by the way, if you're interested in reading it, mm-hmm. you can check it over.
Okay.
I believe, how can people get a copy of that speech of yours if they want to?
Well, after this show is over, about 1 o'clock or so, 1:30, I'm going to be down on the corner of Pacific and, what is that, Carhartt?
Cathcart.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Cathcart. I'll be down in that corner, probably handing out my little flyer there.
Also known as Hippie Corner.
Yeah.
Or the slot, it's the previous Ford's parking lot, and it's... Hey, you all know it, and if you don't, go find out where it is.
But anyway, I list on that flyer all of the things that I witnessed while I was at the Coral Street shelter. I was a resident there for 3.5 months.
And actually, Gina, who I hope will be returning to the studio, was a resident of the Coral Street shelter before then, and she has, in fact, been barred both from the Coral Street shelter and from the Homeless Community Resource property and from the Interfaith Satellite Church program and from the Armory. Allegedly, she is blamed for breaking a guy's ribs in a fight that she says was provoked by a man. And I guess we're hoping we can get some details from her on what that's all about when she returns. She actually has a hearing today before Karen Gillette on that issue. And I think that some of us are going to be present at that hearing, because it's really important that if an individual is barred from the only legal shelter in Santa Cruz at night, and we're not talking outdoor shelter because there ain't no legal outdoor shelter anymore. Thank you, Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Thank you, Pardonnez-moi Paul Merceau, head of the open-air shelter, who broke your word on December 12th by barring people from the open-air shelter in spite of an explicit verbal contract on November 29th. You all may be a little tired of hearing this, but I frankly want to keep repeating it because nowhere else does that information occur. So you were at the city council meeting on Tuesday, as was I, Dan, quite frankly, talking. We were encouraging people to speak up about abusive conditions for homeless people outside, and also to give that money not to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which seems to have some sort of inside track, done deal relationship with the city council, but to this SOS, Save Our Shelters, which is the group that you're working with, Bob Riverwoman, Sherry Connable, and the River Street Refugees.
Right, and Save Our Shelters is the one that every person that's helping in the Save Our Shelters Committee does not receive wages. They do it out of the goodness of their heart. Every single thing that they've done, and some of these people have spent 10, 12 hours a day working with the homeless campers out there to find out what their needs are and meet those needs. And before we got these donations and donations of foods, they made sure that we had food. They made sure that we had tarps for our tents and things. They spent money out of their own pockets. And these are people that were concerned citizens out in the community that joined our group, Save Our Shelters. And we still are looking for some private person to perhaps lease, rent, or donate us a piece of land so that we can have a peaceful place to sleep and a legal place to sleep, because in Santa Cruz after 11 p.m. it's illegal to sleep anywhere in Santa Cruz. And so it's a very fearful situation. It's tense, you know, because you're worried about the police coming to you. And then I guess they have these people that they call the troll busters, people who like to beat up homeless people and things and take advantage of them.
Have you heard any incidents recently of any kind of abusive violence or people outside, Dan?
Not right off the top of my head, but I have heard in the past that people have been abused by people that are called troll busters. And one person told me that he considered the police just as bad as the troll busters, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that means that they've also been roughed up by police or not in the past. That I don't know.
Well, you can fight back against troll busters in theory, but if you fight back against police, you can get shot or jailed. I mean, that is a very significant thing. It puts the police in a position of extreme power and puts other individuals in a position of extreme fear.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I guess this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. You are listening to 96.3 FM. Call-in number, and the lines are open, is 427-3772. And since it is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, I'm going to have to say that I'm kind of taking some issues with Save Our Shelters. Although I didn't get to the last meeting, I have spoken to you, I've spoken to a Barb Riverwoman, and I'm kind of concerned that... I guess it's not really taking issue with Save Our Shelter, because Save Our Shelter has its mission, which seems to be rather narrowly to be concerned with the interests of the particular group of campers that you're with, Dan, which is about 40, 45 odd people, about 37, and how many are you now?
Right now, I'd say you're about right. That's about 37 now.
But, you know, the much broader community, which is now illegal at night, all winter, in spite of the nice public relations gestures made by Mike Ratkin for the small group of people who did go out to New Brighton Beach, there are plenty of other people who got dogs, plenty of other people who are in couples, living in cars, trying to hide in the woods, who are severely disadvantaged, who are criminally abused by being put into a criminal status, in my opinion, because that's what the city of Santa Cruz does, the great liberal city of Santa Cruz with its sleeping ban, who are being denied resources that are being left just to rot. The Coral Street Open Air Shelter, noxious a place as it is, and indeed that was one of the themes of your speech. You spoke about how inappropriate the Coral Street Open Air Shelter was for the placement of the community house transitional housing facility because of its toxic soil, cement dust, highway noise, a number of problems of that sort, plus its proximity to drug and alcoholic people who are, you know, will be using the services right next door, the emergency services.
Hello.
And you pointed all that out. You pointed all that out. And nonetheless, of course, it's still usable by campers and was usable, and there was a deal to continue using it. And it was a legal place for people to be during the day and at night, and it's now a barren, locked-out field. People can't use it. And there's no other place that the city has provided, no other place the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has suggested. You know, and this reality is just sort of sickens me that the bureaucratic machine would prefer to see everybody outside a locked field illegal than inside that field making use of those facilities when it would be so simple to do that. And I guess I feel that I'm wondering, can Save Our Shelter group, with its meetings with the supervisors, with its meetings with the city council, with its meetings with private citizens, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But we met with the city council for what, 2 months at the Barbara Riverwoman's behest in October and November, the so-called duck pond meetings. And we got a deal from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, Daryl Darling and Paul Marceau. Daryl Darling was the director of Community House. Paul Marceau is the head of the Open Air Shelter. We got the deal. And then they broke their word, and they see that, what do? Well, we truck off into the distance. At least the campers trucked off to New Brighton Beach. Now, of course, they were under some real serious disadvantages. Some of them had warrants, perhaps. Many of them had dogs. They weren't interested in engaging in civil rights struggles. They wanted just a goddamn place to sleep at night, for heaven's sake, you know? And that's a reasonable cry. But what about us in the community? I mean, are we going to kind of sit back and say, well, you know, These people are struggling to do their campground thing on the out at New Brighton Beach. The only legal place is closed. We'll wait till March 15th, and if they still don't provide us with some kind of options, then we'll talk about demonstrating. Well, I don't think they're going to take that seriously, and I don't think that homeless people will take seriously people who say that. Again, it sounds to me like you're placing your trust in the wrong people again. These people have shown that they're not interested. And however much Scott Kennedy and Catherine Byers and Celia Scott, have their little meetings, they've admitted, and Catherine Byers is on tape. I'm going to try to play her interview later. She said, we're at a dead end. Dead end. And to have other activists telling me, well, you know, we just have to wait till March 15th. And we're going to meet with these supervisors. It kind of saddens me, but that's because I guess I have a somewhat much more skeptical view of these folks, the supervisors and the politicians, and one borne out by immediate experience, I would believe, than perhaps Barbara and Sherry, and perhaps you do. What's your view on this, Dan? You've been doing some meetings.
Well, I think that the thing that I was talking about earlier about how the anti-homeless is actually coming from the top, you know, the top politicians and stuff, and it's spreading down into the police department and even the hosts, the town hosts, and we have a situation where, I want to kind of change a little bit. One of the statistics that was thrown out yesterday was that nationwide in the United States that by next year there will be 22% more homeless, and the numbers are growing very fast, you know, and I think we're sitting almost on a revolution of some sort because the homeless population is growing by leaps and bounds, and they're not going to be able to ignore this situation, but before they actually deal with it, for some reason, these politicians have to be kicked in the pants before they'll do anything, and it has to be a really, really dire situation that they think they're going to lose all their votes or something before they'll actually do anything. And right here, the telephone's ringing, Robert.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, good morning, Robert. How you doing?
Oh, it sounds like battling Bob LaMonica.
Yeah, I had a couple of comments, if I might. One is about local application of values. And when we have local politicians that seem to spend their time on international and national proclamations, and they have this great fear of dealing with local issues, which is where we cut our teeth, right? It's where we learn.
Right.
It's where we can apply what we claim to be about. Then we're dealing with a hypocrisy. And it seems to me that status quos and even the so-called, liberal and progressive status quos won't move until they're forced into a position by being discredited to move.
I think you're right.
You bet. The issue of homelessness and all these issues, when one raises issues like this, one produces a kind of a discordance, and I certainly honor all those that are working on this issue. I wanted to ask you a question. What do you know about the details of that move to Aptos? Was that Citizens Committee for the Homeless? Was that the City Council? And what's your sense of that?
Well, actually, Dan can also address this issue, too. The move to Aptos came about in the following manner. Citizens Committee for the Homeless, through their two negotiating representatives, Darling and Marceau, promised the campers on November 29th, when they were threatened with demonstrations downtown and at their 10th anniversary celebration, that they'd be allowed to stay until 10 days after the community house permits were granted, which would be actually, at this point, sometime in February, or if they, for some reason, were granted in December, which couldn't happen and didn't happen, then 10 days after January 1st. So there was an agreement that there would be tenure and tenancy for the people who are on the property, unless there were torrential rains that made the property unusable, and everyone agreed to that, and then they would, quote, renegotiate. Is that covered, Dan? Is that
that's true. Oh, yeah. There was supposed to be a renegotiation, and when the storm hit, they trumped up some charges at the right away after only one day of rain, and the field had some mud puddles out there, about one large one and two or three small ones, and they claimed that it was uninhabitable. The health department was closing them down. The city was closing it down.
But in fact, the health department never made any such judgment, nor did the city make any such judgment. What happened was, we got a pump out there, we were pumping it out, we dug trenches. Within 2 days, the water was largely gone. Is that accurate, Dan?
Yeah, the very next day, as a matter of fact, the water sunk right down into the ground, and there was only like two little small mud puddles. I'm talking about just little mud puddles. And so they used those as grounds to close down the camp.
But the very next day, Paul Marceau, head of the open-air shelter, announced unilaterally, he said later in concert with Mike Rutkin, but he came in with Scott Kennedy and said, this shelter is closed. There's a health hazard here. We want you all to leave. We're going to open up a bay, you know, where you can put your stuff during the day, but, you know, everyone has to leave. As of today, the shelter is closed, and you'll have a couple days to leave, but that'll be it. And then on Friday, they pulled out all the porta-potties. Actually, Karen Gillette stopped them from pulling out the last one. We attempted to move in another porta-potty, and we're told we could not. So on the so-called alleged health hazard, they apparently feel it's better for people to defecate and urinate on the ground, because that's people's choice after 5 o'clock when the plumbing facilities at the Homeless Community Resource Center close, which is ridiculous. They should be open all night, in my opinion, and that should be worked out by the city and by other groups. Then on Saturday, I mean, people were preparing to resist this. Some people were just going to stay in the property and tell the Citizens Committee to keep their damn word. You know, that was just, you know, that was how it was going to be. And if it meant arrests, if it meant that people suffering, then they would take those arrests, because it was worth suffering to be lied to and to be evicted and to be, you know, to lose the struggle that they'd fought for. Well, Mike Rutkin came out on the field on Saturday with council members Kennedy and Byers and Scott. Actually, there were four of them together. That's interesting. So that's a violation of the Brown Act. Very interesting. Never mind. But they were, in fact, on the field, and Rutkin gave this tough love speech in which he said, everybody's got to go. People are going to be arrested. I don't care if the Citizens Committee keeps it open. You know, this place is going to, you know, will be closed. It hasn't had a permit for a year and a half, and therefore it can't be here. Now, of course, that was all kind of ex cathedra. He was sort of making this up. I mean, it is true they haven't had a permit for a year and a half, but he was under no injunction from city council to make any decision on any of this stuff. In fact, he really had no power, as far as I know, to make any decision on this stuff, and he really didn't make any decision except that he gave his backing to what the Citizens Committee's frontman, Paul Marceau, did, which is close down the shelter, which, in essence, then several campers who were got down on their knees and essentially gave up all their rights and said, please, please, let us stay here at least for until our checks come on January 1st. And, you know, and then in this disgusting display of pseudo-magnanimity, Daryl Darling said, well, if all you all agree not to do any protesting, and, you know, he had some campers in a position where he could humiliate them and separate them from the activists. And what Rutkin then later did was, but the activists, Sherry Connell, to her credit, spoke up and said, wait a minute, there were arrangements and contracts made here that can't be, cut short this way. And the city council is not really, was present at these deals, because city council members sat in when these things happened. It's not that they formally ratified them, but they did not object to them. And therefore, for Mike Rutkin to somehow give the impression that the whole thing can be just collapsed as a health concern, that the whole thing, is a permit violation, this is his way essentially saying, I'll do whatever the Citizens Committee for the Homeless wants me to. If they want to keep it open, they keep it open, and we'll wink at it. If they don't, we'll call it a permit problem. I mean, it's part of the old process. So he then made a private deal. He made a private decision using city funds to agree to bus people out to New Brighton Beach to get these people off the property so there wouldn't be any protest, to get them out of town so that other homeless people would be divided from them, so that the activist core was removed from the downtown, and so that there were no demonstrations during the Christmas season downtown. And he was successful in doing that.
Yeah, I got a couple of comments and I want to get off the air. It sounds like a common technique. It's that under cover of darkness, right?
Mm-hmm.
You make your move. It seems to me like it was an attempt to dissipate the issue. This
successful attempt. Yeah.
Oh, you bet. This musical chair shell game about who made the decision and why weren't the local relevant officials in Aptos, Capitola area notified. I think a lot of what this gets down to in the general sense is that the hope is that the activists are going to tire out and go away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That could happen. I'm getting pretty tired. Let me ask before you continue, Bob. Dan, is that covered? Am I accurate in what I'm saying there?
Oh, yeah, you've been totally accurate in everything.
So, yes, I'm sorry. So, yeah, they're hoping the activists are going to go away. Bob, go ahead.
That's it. That's my hate. Take care.
All right. Well, thank you, Bob.
You bet. Bye.
Well, one of the ironies of this, of course, is that Mike Rodkin is now somehow parading around as this beatnik bohemian socialist musician with the needs of the homeless so near and dear to his heart, and he's fighting for their rights against the Aptos Capitol of bigots. Well, it's no news that Capitol and Aptos are bigoted, and that's why it's kind of a disingenuous when Mike always tells us, why don't you go protest in Capitola? They're so bigoted there. Yeah. Well, the reason we're protesting here is because we got our own hypocrites who are running the city who claim not to be bigoted, and we want them to live up to their word. You know, Mike Rodkin, live up to your word. Mike Rodkin, stop arresting people for sleeping at night. Mike Rodkin, don't declare people criminals for innocent conduct. You know, don't make the homeless population suffer unnecessarily in this situation. And, of course, Rodkin is full of verbiage, and his actions show that he has absolutely no interest in altering the policies that the city has pursued for the last decade, which is criminalizing people at night, rubber stamping the actions of the social service groups that they've supported with their money, like the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and being paranoid to an extreme about the providing any expanded, significantly homeless-run social services, like a campground run by the homeless. And this paranoia is not something that I think Bud Riverman and your group can talk away, Dan. I think the paranoia is deep. I think they're going to schmooze you to death and do nothing until there is massive community outpouring of rage and concern about this issue. I mean, I thought this for a long time, and I'm not going to belabor the point. Instead, I'm going to turn to another issue, unless there's something more you want to say about this issue. The curfew. The curfew issue is still active, folks. The Board of Supervisors, whose phone number is 454-2200, and our phone number here, in case you want to join this dialogue, is 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC.